Welcome to Band of Gamers Podcast, episode number 10. My name is Greylock3491, and this week I'm joined by my two very good friends, DBQ Hams. Say hi, DB.
Hey, it's good to be back, everybody. Thanks.
And Osiris Prime. Say hi, Prime.
Hello, everybody. It's good to have the whole gang here this week.
Well, as we do every week, we're going to start off by talking about what we played this week. And because DB wasn't on last time, DB, why don't you go first? What have you been playing?
So I wasn't on last time, but I want to thank Prime there for posting some Smite codes in the forums at Casual Adult Gamers. So I've been playing Smite, which is a PC MOBA, which just went into beta and now even open beta on the Xbox One. I think almost anybody can get codes at this time or just sign up. They keep emailing me with more and more codes to share with friends. It's a kind of a third-person MOBA. So the idea is, you know, the MOBAs have originated from a mod out of Warcraft 3, where it's kind of an RTS, but you're really controlling only one character. And Smite changes that formula up a little bit and puts you kind of in a third-person camera perspective over the shoulder of a variety of different gods out of different mythologies and religions and things like that. So it makes it feel kind of like a third-person action game. It works pretty well. So I still am trying to figure out some of the dynamics in terms of what all the skills do and what all the you know, what the different powers are. And it, because it's a beta, I am not quite sure how to select characters. I think I did the very first time, and ever since then I get to the screen and it just kind of throws me into somebody and starts a game. So maybe I have to figure that out in a different menu. So there's that. Prime, have you played, you posted the codes, have you played Smite at all?
I played a little bit of it when the beta first started, and just kind of the tutorial, and a little bit kind of after that. I haven't really played too much after that, though, unfortunately. I've been busy with other games, taking my time up.
So I played through the tutorial and probably played about 6 other games, with probably a different character each time, which isn't necessarily helpful because you're trying to relearn. But I played both the... So it comes, you know, the traditional kind of MOBA style is that you're on a big map and you have basically 3 lanes that you're kind of pushing through to get to the enemy's base. And I think there's a map like that here, but I've only seen it in the initial... In probably the initial game I played. I played one of the games called Assault, where you're in a big arena and you're just battling each other along with other kind of AI enemies that you can mop up to gain extra XP. And then I've played one that's called, I don't remember, maybe Conquest, where it's just kind of a single lane. So there's one big kind of alleyway and your bases are on one side at the bottom of the screen and the enemy's bases are on the top. And you're just kind of moving your way through, and so it's this kind of push-pull back and forth. I think it's worth anybody checking out if people have been turned MOBAs. If people have been turned off from MOBAs in the past, it isn't bad because it doesn't really play. It feels like a console game. So compared to other MOBAs like League of Legends or Dota, or you know, I've talked about playing Infinite Crisis before, and Heroes of the Storm is another MOBA that came out from Blizzard. And it just came out in the past week or so in open beta. And I had a beta code, I don't know, probably the last time I was on this podcast, which has been a little bit now. But I've been playing it on a really regular basis. I'm not super leveled up. I maybe only play a game or two a day, but I end up playing maybe every other day. I keep coming back to it because it's only maybe 20 minutes per game. So it ends up being something that is really kind of easy to pick up and play. They keep rotating different heroes to try out for free, which is kind of fun because you get to try different characters, but also not super fun because I probably should actually pony up and buy some characters so I get good at one rather than just keeping to try the free ones. I was traveling for work and in the hotel room at night, this is the game that I fired up to play, and It was terrible on a hotel connection, but so it keeps me coming back. It is it's all a bunch of Blizzard characters and what from StarCraft and Diablo and World of Warcraft, and so between, you know, I never played World of Warcraft, played Warcraft 3. I've played Diablo, but I never have a super strong connection to those characters. And now, actually, between playing Hearthstone, the Blizzard's card game, and playing this, Heroes of the Storm, I'm actually kind of interested in the world a little bit more than I've ever been in the past. So, Heroes of the Storm, it's an open beta. It goes free-to-play at the beginning of June. If people on PC, it doesn't... I run it on both my kind of graphics-heavy PC and also kind of a PC that's at this stage 6 years old, and it's run on both of them, and it runs pretty smoothly, so it's not a graphics horse, so it should be able to, you know, anybody should be able to install it and give it a try. It's got a great tutorial. It really is user friendly, and if, you know, if people have been interested or heard all the fuss about things like League of Legends but have been intimidated to dive into something like that, Heroes of the Storm is really kind of a fun kind of gateway in. And I've been enjoying it. I don't know how much how much it'll continue to hook me, but it's really been fun. I played a little bit of, this is the summertime, so I played a little bit of Super Mega Baseball, which is kind of a, it looks kind of like big, blocky RBI baseball characters. It's on PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4. Super fun. I've been playing it with my kids. It's summertime, so in the rainy days, we've been wanting to play kind of a fun sports game. And it's got really good both player progression and some mechanics there. It's not MLB The Show in terms of all the finesse pieces, but it's really fun. And I just read this week that it's also coming to PC and Xbox One. So something out there for anybody who likes to play a game of video game baseball but doesn't want the Super Simulation, Super Mega Baseball, really has been a fun game that I've enjoyed with my kids. Gray, I know you've been playing Destiny. I've been playing Destiny as well, but we'll let you touch about that in terms of House of Wolves. Prime, you and I played a little bit of Battlefield Hardline. I've been picking at the single player story, but I'll let you talk a little bit about some of your time in Battlefield Hardline and any other games. So, what have you been playing, Prime?
Yeah, so yeah, we did have that Thursday night game night, if you want to call it that, with few other guys from Casual Adult Gamers, and that was fun. I pretty much got destroyed for most of the matches, but I think the last couple I was finally starting to come around. So unfortunately, that's when we were about to stop. So, but it was still fun though. It was a good time rolling with, you know, three or four guys. I think we had like four or five at one point.
Yeah, I think there were five of us in a squad. Lots of others from Casual Adult Gamers. Including World Voyager. But yeah, thanks for helping me not be at the very bottom of the leaderboard. I appreciate that, Prime.
No problem. Anything to help. So along with Hardline, I played, well, my usuals. I played a little bit of Call of Duty Advanced Warfare and Minecraft throughout the week, just maybe like a half hour, 45 minutes at the most. And then I've been going through my backlog still on Strider now, which was the, I don't know if it was really a reboot or a remake. I'm not entirely sure because I never played the original Strider, but it's on the Xbox One, so I've been, I bought that, I think, almost a year ago, more than a year ago, I think, but just now getting around to it. So I'm playing through that, and I'm not really sure how far along I'm in it because I started playing at one point and then just completely stopped, so I picked it back up where I left off, which is usually pretty hard, but controls are not too, you know, they're not too hard to pick back up. It's pretty simple, you know, just a couple, you got like a light slash and a hard slash and jump, and that's pretty much it. A couple of abilities. So going through that, and which actually I also streamed on Twitch, and then I've actually exported that over to YouTube, so you can watch that on my YouTube channel, which I'll talk about more at the end of the show. In our closing section. So there's that. And then finally, what has been taking up most of my time is The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, which I'm pretty much loving right now. It's been going, let's see, I've pretty much been playing since it came out, at least, like an hour or so. Not every day, but just on the weekends when I usually get to play. So it's definitely scratching that Skyrim itch that I was having, which I think I've mentioned in the past. That's what I kind of attracted me to that game in the first place. So just a big open world, you got the main story obviously that you can go run through, but you can just get lost in the world, just wander in one direction, and there's all kinds of different quests you can pick up, the side quests and all that. Definitely a lot harder than Skyrim. Just for example, like I said, if you walk in a direction, you pick up some side quests. It actually, when you go into the quest section in your menu map, it actually tells you or recommends that you should be a certain level to actually try to go after that. So right off the bat, I probably got like two, maybe three that it mentioned that I should be at least level two, and I think I had one that was like a level three. So I haven't even touched those yet because I'm pretty sure I'll get destroyed. Another thing is the leveling is. You need a lot of experience points to level up. So I played probably about, I think it was 8 hours, and I've just now got my character to level two. So it's definitely going to be a grind fest on this game. So if that's not your thing, you might want to try and maybe look for something else to play. But I've been having a lot of fun.
So is it designed in such a way that the levels are big jumps rather than other games like, I don't know, like Dragon Age, where the levels come a little more quickly, and so the skill tree is bigger pieces versus more incremental, or does it feel like you're really having to fight for those levels?
No, I mean it's yeah, it definitely feels like you have to fight, you got to keep going, and you got to keep battling out there and just take quests on as much as you can, because it's like I said, I played 8 hours, and I just now got to level two, and I had done a pretty good number of quests. Like I think the first four or five quests that I did were the main quests. And then after that, I was just like, I'm just gonna go off and explore the world, and I've been pretty much doing side quests after that. And it was still, I mean, even through those main quests, it just didn't seem like they gave you a whole lot of points. So, although I think you can get, see, there's experience points, and then there's kind of different points that you get for like the different skills that you can level up and all that. So you can still get those skill points doing other things. So it's not just when you level up, they give you skill points, which is nice, obviously, because it would take forever to upgrade anything. Because I probably have like two or three different skills now that I've upgraded. So there's kind of like two different point, what do you call it? Two different point systems, I guess you want to say. So it's a little weird, I guess. Definitely different from anything else I've ever played, like Dragon Age or Skyrim or anything like that. But yeah, it's really fun. I'm trying to think. So that's pretty much all I've played so far. Greg, what do you got for us?
Well, I want to thank you for the Stratus stream. I had not seen that game before, and I really enjoyed watching it. That's actually a pretty good-looking game for a side scroller. So I was having flashbacks to Contra on the NES. I'm like, "Oh, this looks like fun!" But so thank you for sharing that, Prime. I appreciate it. I think in the last podcast we mentioned Island Arts. Stream and live stream where she was doing the Little Big Planet 3, which was pretty awesome as well. So for me, the last week and a half has been all about the House of Wolves and getting ready for it and excited about how I can exchange materials now because I had way more energy than I needed, and then making getting my hunter to level 32. I was almost there. I really wanted to get there before House of Wolves came out, but only got the 31 and three quarters, so I'm 32 now, and now I'm trying to rank up different equipment and just really enjoying and I haven't even gotten to the Prison of Elders, which I think would be a lot of fun. I just got off with Macebite and with my good friend Macebite and Wonder Boy V2 Andre. We just did the new strike together and got our strange coins for the week, and I enjoyed the new strike, although it is hard. Even I'm a 31 and in my current loadout of 31, almost 32, and I still had a hard time with it. We all died a couple times, so but really enjoying it. Just like the whole concept of, hey, the reef is now open, the Fallen has rebelled, and we got to go help the Queen round these bad guys up. So I actually played a little bit, actually chatted a little bit yesterday with Bullet and Bobo and Wonder Boy. They were hunting down some wolves and having a blast doing that. So it was great to catch up with those guys. And finally got Heroes of the Storm installed. Didn't get to play it, but I got it installed. So I did that this morning. It was like before I leave the house and go to work, I had to leave this morning at 6. So I was like, I'm gonna get this installation started. And when I got home 12 hours later, it had finished. Haven't played it, but I will buy. I don't know how much it is, but I'm assuming it's not too much. I want to buy Jim Raynor because he's one of my. I'm a big Jim Raynor fan from StarCraft 2, and. I've always played. I really got sucked into StarCraft 1 was my first RTS, and then of course World of Warcraft. Not World of Warcraft. Warcraft 3 was a great RTS. And just played. I've played so many since then. All the Command and Conquers, and or it seems like most of them anyways. And it's a fun genre. And there's been a lot of talk about, hey, will Halo Wars 2 be announced at E3? And I don't think it will, but. I'll tell you that having played Halo Wars and Command and Conquer Red Alert on or I think it was Red Alert 2 on the Xbox 360, Halo you really get an appreciation for Halo Wars. It was really a work of art. The whole control system was awesome, and so I'm looking forward to trying MOBAs because I know that's where they come out of. As DB said earlier, that's kind of where they evolved from. So. I know it's a big thing, so be interesting to see. I got to check out some Smite too, because I've been hearing a lot about that as well. But yeah, that's what I played. Didn't get to play a whole lot besides Destiny this week. Talked a lot about Halo Master Chief Collection. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. But that's about it. So nothing exciting. You guys got a lot more gaming in than I did.
So, Gray, I've got a couple of questions. Before we go back to Destiny, I do want to just pitch a few things out there on Heroes of the Storm. So the tutorial character that you play through with is Raynor from StarCraft 2.
Yes!
So I think you might like that. And actually, there's a couple packs for sale, like bundles of characters for sale before the game goes live on the 2nd of June. And for like $5, you get Raynor and two other characters and like a experience boost. And that's the one that I've been eyeing up, really, because the next tier up is like 40. And I'm not quite sure I'll get $40 out of it, but I know that I've already put well over $5 worth of time into that game. So I feel like Blizzard could get a little bit of my money. Not that they need it, but yeah, so I think you might enjoy.
Yeah, that's $5. Yeah, that's a done deal. I'll just, after the podcast, I'll go up there and buy it.
So, House of Wolves, Prime, you had played Destiny 2. You had popped in, do you have any thing that you were going to say in terms of either Heroes of the Storm or House of Wolves?
I actually did, and now I forgot what my question was going to be about House of Wolves. But go ahead, and if I think about
Okay,
it, I'll
well.
chime in.
So I want to ask a little bit more about House of Wolves. So I have not bought the expansions. I am still a Destiny holdout. As much as I love that world, I am still waiting. Because I talked with Wonderboy V2. He and I were playing online, both with his girlfriend and also with Babbo, as the House of Wolves kind of geared up. And we played some of the patrol missions, which is actually really cool. Like, you have a bunch of House of Wolves, bunch of Fallen to take out, and then you get a treasure chest that's somewhere in the area that you have to hunt down within a certain period of time. And actually, if you can, get on your speeder and ride off into the next area and come back, you can actually get two pulls on that treasure chest. So I had a lot of fun kind of gearing up for House of Wolves and haven't been out to the reef yet, so I'm really kind of curious, are you satisfied with the way that they did some storytelling, or there was definitely some shortcomings after the Dark Below? Do you feel like they addressed those, Gray, or are you more hopeful for something that, it's an incremental step rather than a leap forward?
Well, I definitely think the dock below, if you take the raid aside, was a little lacking for the 15 or 20 bucks. And I say that because you got three missions, you get some multiplayer maps, but you can't play against bots. There's no combat training or, you know, you against the bots type of multiplayer. So it's all you versus other people who play every day of the week and are really good. So why be cannon fodder? And so you get three single-player missions and a strike. And, you know, I thought for 20 bucks, you know, that's a third of a game. That's a little weak. House of Wolves adds a strike, adds three single-player campaigns, adds some bounties. But it also adds a new social space, which anybody can go to. But it also adds a new co-op mode called the Prison of Elders, and we've talked about this in the past. But and I haven't had a chance to play that because I haven't finished all three single-player missions yet. But to me, that extra effort, right? The Prison of Elders is there's four different levels you have to get through before you go to the fifth, and to me that extra work as well as the polish. A little bit more polish, a little bit more work on the presentation and kind of making the story, you know, the story cohesive. I think that's it made it worth the $15 or $20. And I will say this, too. One of the things I was surprised about is the fact, now, I got Destiny on launch day, and I pre-bought the digital expansions, right? So when I opened up House of Wolves to see what they did, they actually change some of the look and feel of some of the environments, even though you're playing again in some of the same levels, they really look different because it's like different lighting, different atmosphere, and then some of the bots have changed as well. So take the shanks. There's now two new types of shanks. There's a kind of like a cursed shank that explodes if you get too close to it, and there's also a sniper shank. So you know, it does seem like it's worth the 15 or 20 bucks to me. As a matter of fact, if somebody came to me and said, I got Destiny, should I get both or should I just get House of Wolves? It would be hard for me to recommend the dock below, except for the raid, which I'm getting good at and I'm starting to get proficient at. You know, there's not a whole lot in the dock below, but and like you said, DB, if you wait till Comet or the Fallen King, was that what it was, Prime?
Taken King.
If you wait till September, you'll probably get a super duper deal. But if you're looking to join a group of guys who are playing on a certain night and they're all playing the new stuff, you know, it's kind of like, you know, is $15 worth staying with all my buddies and staying up with the new stuff? And for me, it was never that case with Call of Duty because I thought that was so repetitive. But Destiny for me is all about co-op gaming. And so 15 bucks to get a bunch of new maps to do co-op with my buddies, yeah, it's worth it to me. So those are my thoughts. What do you think, DB?
I think you make a really good, a nice parallel there. You know, as this week they just announced, what is it, Prime, it's Criminal Activity for Battlefield Hardline, the new expansion maps that are coming out.
Yes.
Yeah, so that idea of kind of staying with your friends, right? So if you're, you know, playing in a competitive shooter like Battlefield Hardline or Advanced Warfare, you know, it's definitely a certain type of gameplay there, but I totally agree with you, Gray. You know, the thing I love about of Destiny is that it really is co-op. You know, it's co-op against a bunch of computer enemies. You know, sometimes it's just a really big health bar that you have to whittle down, but the idea of doing it together is enjoyable. And so you're right. If you got a good group of friends going, you know, is it worth three drinks out at someplace at a night to socialize with your friends for who knows how many weeks? Yeah. You know, for 15 bucks, 20 bucks, yeah. You know, that if you compare it to what else you would use socialization for with your friends, it's completely worth it. That's a really good point.
Yeah, for me, I mean, again, the co-op, it's just very good, well-done co-op, and even the strikes, you can jump into a strike in weekly or just a regular strike, and it'll matchmake you, and the matchmaking is good. The people you end up playing with almost always are great, and yeah, I mean, 15 bucks is the price of going to see a movie and a small popcorn. So if you can play once a week, like I do, typically once or twice a week with your friends for a couple hours, and that extends the game and makes it fun, that's great. And if we go back to, like, I think we're all big fans of, almost everybody I know is a big fan of Rainbow Six Vegas, Vegas 2. If they would have extended that with 8 more Terrace Hunt maps for another $20, I think everybody would have done it, you know? So there's just a different flavor to getting additional co-op story missions that you can run again together, in strikes together and again, versus just new multiplayer arenas. I'll never be as good as that teenager who comes home from high school at 2 o'clock every day and plays for 5 hours. So I don't want to be put in an arena with him unless I can do something like combat training, where I can just get my friends on one side and play against the bots. I'm not really interested in that. So, but I guess that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Do you guys have anything else to say on any of the games we played this week?
Oh, I was just going to mention on House of Wolves, I'm in the same boat as UDB. I haven't downloaded any of the DLC or the expansions. I was just kind of waiting. I've been kind of burned in the past with DLC or like in a season pass, so I didn't want to, jump into it. And kind of sounds like, it was, for now, it was kind of a good idea, because the first half was, all right. And now the second part, now the House of Wolves seems to be, a little bit meatier, a little bit, more involved. That, there's a lot more things than just the multiplayer. There's, the single player and a couple of co-op stuff and, things like that. I just what was the season pass for Destiny? I don't remember. Was it 30, 35?
It was $35. It still is $35. I think you can go to either online or at GameStop or Best Buy, and it's $35.
Yeah, matter of fact, if you buy it on the 360, you automatically get it on the Xbox One. So it used to be that way with the game too. That's how I bought the game digitally. But if you bought the expansion pass digitally on the X360, that's still a deal. We verified that last week. If you bought the expansion pass on the 360, it's good on the Xbox One as well. But again, it'll probably go on sale in a few weeks, right? That's always like, I bought Hardline the week before it went on sale, so. If you guys just wait a little bit longer, you'll probably get a great deal.
Yeah, it's kind of weird too, because I think you mentioned last week that for the previous DLC, they were actually given the multiplayer maps for free, right, Gray?
Yeah, that's why it's kind of odd, because, and we talked about how you and I talked about how Bungie has done that in the past, but it's like, why would anybody buy the Dock Below now? Because half of it, you would imagine, the PvP, which I know you're a big fan of, you can play those free now. So I don't know. I do think, and maybe it's after E3 or around E3, I do think, if you guys haven't bought it yet, I would just hold off, because it has to go on sale with Comet or the Fallen King coming out in September-ish. I gotta see that DLC pack going on sale, if not this month, next month. But
Yeah, I could see Activision bundling like Destiny Year One as a retail disc, just to have something out there for the holiday season. Or maybe even include like a voucher for whatever the new September Year Two launch is. But yeah, I think they've got to have something on retail shelves to keep Destiny in front of people's minds. Especially, they've got Activision's got what? Destiny in September? Then they get Skylanders and the new Guitar Hero Live in October, and then they roll right into Call of Duty. So they want that store shelf space. So yeah, I mean, I'm really tempted, because I've had great times over the past year. Destiny is the game that made me jump to the next generation. So I'm really tempted by doing it, but also Prime, you continue to motivate me to go tackle my backlog. Which is continuing to build, as I just picked up. What was it? I picked up Wolfenstein: The New Order, or the New Order, off of GameFly for like less than $15 a couple weeks ago. So, with that new Wolfenstein expansion, the physical disc was really cheap, used on GameFly. And so, if people are looking for used cheap games, GameFly, their used sales are a good place to pick up some of that stuff. Just this week, they've got Evolved for $20 or Sunset Overdrive for $18. So again, you know, it's a good place to kind of pick up some stuff. Although it keeps adding to my backlog, so
stop buying games.
I know, but I'm a sucker for, right? Like, if it gets under $20, it's like, okay, well, that's well worth it, because at some point, I think I'm going to put it in there, you know. But I am totally on the cheap end of the gaming spectrum. As much as I'm interested in, like, Morpheus and Oculus Rift and, you know, the idea of what VR can be, I'm too far on the cheap end of it to dive too far in. But, Prime, you had posted an article out of talking about the Oculus Rift in terms of that is not going to work for me in terms of the price point of what the Oculus Rift might look like.
Yeah, that's a good segment. Let's go ahead and jump into the news. And Prime, you're first with that article.
Yes, yeah, so this is actually coming from Polygon, polygon.com. And the CEO of Oculus, Brendan, and I'm probably going to butcher his name, Irb, something like that, sorry. He came out with the price point of $1,500. But kind of not really, though. So he kind of expanded on that price point. So he's talking about if you actually need a PC. This will be with a PC if you needed to buy a new PC, a gaming PC, and the Oculus Rift. So he didn't specify exactly what the Oculus Rift was going to be. There's some speculation on some of the other sites. But he's just saying with the PC, if you had to buy a new PC and the Oculus, it would be around about $1,500. So, and so like I mentioned, some of the other sites were kind of trying to break it down. So they did give, a while back, I think it was a couple weeks ago, they did give the minimum or the recommended specs for the PC you need, and I'll just run through that real quick. So you would need an NVIDIA GTX 970 or higher, or the AMD 290 equivalent or greater, and then an Intel i5 4590 equivalent or greater, 8 gigs of RAM, compatible HDMI video output, two USB 3.0 ports, and then Windows 7 with Service Pack 1 or newer. So those are the, you know, recommended specs, which if you do a lot of PC gaming, and I know Gray does, and I think DB, you do, you know, you do a little bit of that too, you probably want to bump that up even more, because that's just the recommended specs. So they probably, you know, you want to go with the max. It's most likely going to be maybe double that, you know, if you want a really good, smooth, you know, gaming experience. So with those specs, they're thinking that the Oculus is probably like around $300, with the rest of that $1,500 being, you know, your PC that you're going to need to buy. So with that in mind, would you guys be interested at all, DB?
I think this is one of the ways where it's going to push me into being really interested in Project Morpheus with Sony, that if I can pick up a $300 PlayStation 4 and, you know, another $200 Project Morpheus headset, so like a $500 bundle, and maybe at E3 we'll see some more of that. But to me, that feels a whole lot more plug and play, and being able to use it for multiple purposes. Granted, it's a big gaming PC, but for me that's a pretty big investment. I mean, my gaming PC is a couple years old. I've been able to update it with graphics cards, but really, if I'm going to make another jump, it is going to be another investment. And at this stage, I don't know, right? You just got done telling me to stop buying games. So I guess I would rather have them have led with, oh, Oculus Rift is only going to be this amount if you have the specs to be able to handle it, and then let people kind of figure out how they're going to handle it, rather than say, you know, throwing out that $1,500 price tag. That's a headline that you can't take back.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. I don't know why, what they were thinking when, you know, they said, hey, it's going to be $1,500. But, you know, I mean, I don't know what, you know, how they came to, you know, thinking that was a good idea. But, yeah, I mean, I have almost a 10-year-old PC, so there's no way I'd be able to to run this. I don't even have a dual core on my PC. I got a Pentium 4 still, you know. So obviously, I don't do a lot of PC gaming. I do mostly console, but you know, there's just no way I'd have to, you know, buy a new PC, whole gaming PC, and you know, with the Rift 2, I would definitely be at that $1,500 or so. So it's, I don't know. I mean, I've never seen it. You know, I've never actually got to play with it or anything. I'm sure it's pretty cool, but, and I like, you know, gadget type things, but there's just no way I'd, you know, unless I won the lottery or something, that I'd be able to afford something like this. I don't know. How about you, Gray?
Well, you know, I was always on the opinion that a good gaming PC is going to cost you close to 2 grand. And I know over the years we've made a lot of strides. I mean, I've built gaming PCs probably around the $1,000 mark. You know, you don't have to be on the bleeding edge. Even if you have all the greatest and newest hardware, my brother does this, my older brother, sometimes the game still, you cannot turn all the features on. You know, the code is not good enough to turn everything on to the max. So I think, you know, if you're very interested in this type of you know, VR, I would definitely say, you know, give it some time. Don't be a bleeding edge, you know, leading edge type of person. Give it some time. I think we're really waiting for that killer app, right? So I remember back in the 90s, the CD-ROM, right? What was the killer app for the CD-ROM, right? Maybe for you it was Myst. Or maybe it was something like Wing Commander 3, where they had Luke Skywalker, I'm sorry, Mark Hamill, you know, in some you know, full motion video, whatever, you know, maybe it was Rebel Assault, whatever it was. I mean, you had to have a CD-ROM. Like, everybody was like, "Oh, I gotta get a CD-ROM so I can play this game," right? And so, what's gonna be the killer app for VR? You know, there's gonna be something really cool that comes out. Everybody's gonna be like, "Oh, that is it. That's what I want. That's why I have to get the math coprocessor for my 386, right?" Or whatever it is. You know, when that killer app comes out, then everybody will benchmark it and spec and say it. Then they'll tell you, okay, it has to be a thought. You know, the parts equal $1,000, or the parts equal $750. But you know, with all the efforts going into gaming PCs, it does seem like you're going to be able to get a good gaming PC for $999. You know, I think you're going to be able to find a, you know, and the biggest piece is going to be the video card. So, you know, 16 gigs of RAM and a 500 gig or a terabyte hard drive. I mean, that's going to be doable. But again, what's that killer? Do you just want to be on the bleeding edge, or is there a killer app that you're waiting to play? You know, is it that game you've always wanted to play? You know, the reason I got an Xbox One was Halo, right? So what's the killer app for VR? And that's what that'll I think that'll make a lot of people's minds up. Does that make sense, Prime?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I don't know. It's like I said. I think it's cool. Like I said, I never got a chance to play with it or anything like that. But you know, once it eventually, more than likely, it'll come down in price. Maybe you know, I can check it out. Or like DB said, you know, maybe check out Morpheus or something or whatever else is. I'm sure other versions or not versions, but other companies will come out with stuff. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and that's a really good point about Morpheus, because if you already have a PS4, you just buy that and you're done. You know, there's no PC to build and configure or Windows to install, so that's a good point, DB.
Yeah, I'm hoping that, you know, E3 shows a little bit more of Morpheus, and if Sony has, you know, considering PlayStation 4's, you know, span in the market and that they're the market leader, it puts Morpheus definitely within reach of a much wider community than probably people that have hardcore gaming PCs.
Well, and to segue into your news article, let's talk about Sony a little bit and talk about what they're saying.
Yeah, so this week this article came from VentureBeat, and it's been picked up at other places as well. But so Sony had an investors call this week, and one of their things, their CEO, Sony Computer Entertainment CEO Andrew House, talked about how their first party lineup is a little sparse this year, is a direct quote. So another quote there is, I think it places even greater emphasis on getting good third party support. So, which I think is an interesting thing to talk about or to acknowledge at an investor call, where really your investors, you know, this is not PR posturing to kind of, you know, play coy before E3 in terms of what's going to happen. You know, these are the investors for Sony, and so to be able to kind of pony up and say, yeah, it's not, we don't have a whole lot of first party stuff. So that's a pretty honest statement. You know, I think what it may mean is, you know, as they head into E3 here in the next couple of weeks, and I know we're going to keep talking about this, is maybe they are more focused on hardware like Morpheus and what they can do, and they lean heavier on third-party exclusive stuff. You know, they've had the Destiny exclusive for last year. Maybe they pony up a little bit more cash and get it again for the coming year. You know, they have Street Fighter, what is it, 5 coming out? You know, so maybe they're throwing a little bit more money. It's probably cheaper to throw money to get some timed exclusives than it is to spend the studio time to put out a big triple party game. Or the last triple A party game they put out was The Order, which, you know, as critics talked about it, and we didn't really talk about it, but critics talked about it as something you burn through in a couple of hours. So it'll be interesting to see how the acknowledgement of a sparse first-party lineup affects how they posture themselves and position themselves as we head into E3. So, great. What were you had some thoughts on this. What were you thinking of where this puts Sony?
Well, I think you set that up correctly in the fact that your insight could turn out to be prophetic in the fact that maybe they're saying this to their... All right, so everybody's been talking about this. They're like, what is Sony's big game? Uncharted got bumped. What is their big holiday game? And there's also been a lot of rumors that, hey, maybe they're going to, you know, first Sony grabbed the Destiny timed exclusives for expansion packs and whatnot. And then Microsoft grabbed the Tomb Raider, the next edition of the Tomb Raider series. And so there's been a lot of speculation that with Battlefront and a lot of these other third-party games that Sony's going to throw down the money to try to get some timed exclusives. You know, things that Microsoft usually did better at getting, that Sony was going to do that. And I'm kind of thinking, well, if you're telling your investors you have a thin first-party lineup this year, well, maybe you're trying to justify spending money to get timed exclusives, you know, to get that first DLC pack for Call of Duty, or to get that first expansion pack for Battlefront, or to get whatever for a bunch of games. So I think E3 will tell us if that's their strategy going into the holiday season. And I think it's almost got to be, because Microsoft has such a strong first-party lineup. You really can't see them doing spending a lot of extra money to try to get a lot of more, you know, timed exclusives during the same period. It just doesn't seem to make sense. So it'll be interesting to see how that rolls out. What do you think, Prime?
Yeah, it's kind of weird, because it's almost kind of Sony and Xbox have flipped, because I don't know if it was last week or maybe a couple weeks ago that Phil Spencer was talking about how they're going to be very first-party centric on E3, showing, you know, the first-party games, and now you have Sony here saying, you know, they don't really have too much on, you know, the first-party side, but like you guys are saying, they have they've been going heavily with Destiny. Obviously, they were the main console, I guess, if you want to say, as far as marketing and stuff. And when I was listening to another podcast, and I think you mentioned this too, Gray, about Battlefront, then more than likely they're probably going to be showcasing that maybe at their conference, which would be pretty huge. You know, major Star Wars game that's, you know, in a while, that's more than likely going to be pretty good. You know, obviously nobody knows, no one's played it, but and then they have Street Fighter 5, and we see how that goes. Although if I guess they've been having some problems with I think it's Ultra Street Fighter 4, so I don't know, maybe, you know, there's some stumbling with that when it came out of the gate, I think this week or last week. So I don't know, we'll see how it goes. I know I think they're projecting first quarter for Morpheus for next year, so I don't know, maybe they'll lean on that too during the conference, you know, just to try to fill that first party void. So we'll see. I don't know if If they have, you never know, they might have something up their sleeve. They said they have a sparse first party, so you never know. They might pull, with just one or two things, and they can, they could have, but they still might be something major. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I think they've got, they've got a few things to show, certainly, and they've already been, when Battlefront premiered at Star Wars Celebration, Sony was all over that in terms of branding it and doing that. So maybe, that's their big hook there, as you talked about, Gray, but I think you're right, Prime. There might be a few pieces there to kind of their big hooks and their big tent poles for the fall. But at the same time, when they're selling as strong as they are, there's not a whole lot of console exclusives. And, certainly there's been a few over the last couple years, but the majority of stuff, because of the way that the market is, publishers need to publish on both consoles in order to recoup their cost. So the fact that Sony's leading and it has larger market penetration, they're not in a bad spot to sit back and say, yeah, we'll let the other people take the investment and we'll continue to grow larger in terms of PlayStation 4 penetration. The challenge there, I think, just from a business standpoint, is that the profit margins on your hardware is slim, and you make up those margins on software. And so without a lot of first-party software, I think that's why this became a discussion point at an investor's call, is that it's either the combination of profit margins are slim on this piece, and as you were talking about, Gray, we also need to justify why we're investing X amount to pony up to get those timed exclusives that you're talking about, Prime. So, Gray, what else do you have that's on your list of things that have tripped your fancy for the week?
Yeah, I think it's time for my fabulous fast Facebook 5. Every week as I browse the web, I try to get onto the all the gaming sites, many of the gaming sites anyways, in the morning before work over coffee, and I post that all on the Casual Adult Gamers Facebook group. And to share it with everybody, and I want to invite everybody. If you find an interesting news story, feel free to share it on that group. It's totally open for people to join in. We accept everybody, unless you post in non-English text, then we remove you. We had one guy who came in and just kept posting in Spanish, and we're like, most of us can't speak Spanish, so we're going to take you off. But in any case, what I posted up there this week was the first thing, or in the last week and a half, the first thing is. The white Xbox is back. You can get a white Xbox One with the Master Chief Collection. Now I like everything, even my Sega Dreamcast, which everybody knows the Sega came out as white originally. Even my Sega Dreamcast is black. I like everything in my entertainment center to be pitch black. So either of you guys like the white consoles? I just never got into them. DB, do you like the white consoles? Or would you prefer to have it black?
So I guess it depends where it is in my house, right? So I've got a last generation. I had a white Wii, and having another white console next to it would have made sense. This generation, in my main room, I've got black consoles, but my white Wii is downstairs next to my black Xbox 360 or Xbox One. So a white one there would make sense. I think it's a personal preference piece. I think the white controller does kind of look cool, but at the same time, maybe for people that the white console sold out fast in the fall with Sunset Overdrive, and so for those people that have that preference, this is a nice way to get back and get it. They may already have a copy of Master Chief Collection, but it certainly works better now than it did when they would have bought it back in the fall. How about you, Prime? Any console preferences?
If there's a choice, I actually like to have black. I have unfortunately with the 360, obviously when it first came out it was white, so I had to get the white one. Same thing with the Wii, but with the Wii U I actually got black, and obviously with the Xbox One original one I got, or Xbox One I should say, I got the black version. But I do think that white version looks actually pretty sharp. which I normally wouldn't, I wouldn't like it, but I think it looks pretty cool. So I don't know. Like you said, it's personal preference. Great.
Well,
Anything
that's
else?
interesting. Yeah, no, that's real interesting. The next thing I had was that Good Old Games, or GOG, announced their Galaxy interface, which is supposed to be kind of like Steam. And I was reading the article. I'm like, well, this is cool, and I'm glad they did it. I don't really think it challenges Steam, but I just thought it was interesting. I wanted to bring it up. So GOG, I've bought games off them before. They do like EA does every once in a while. They give away a free game, or like Steam does, they'll have a sale. And their big claim to fame is there's no DRM, so you download it, you install it, and you can play it. You don't have to worry about checking in on the internet, or having the original CD or anything. We talked about House of Wolves, and I think most of the reactions have been pretty positive. What we didn't talk about is one of our good buddies over at CAG. Actually, I think he's a one of the football players, Lord Destro or Jermaine, posted on the Facebook group that you can actually pick up Destiny this week at Toys R Us, any version, for $20. And I was just like, that is awesome. Like, I wanted to go out and buy another copy. I already have a copy, but it was like $20. I want to buy another copy. So I just thought that was great, and I wanted to share that with the audience. And Amazon is matching that on last gen, but not on next gen. So, but on Toys R Us, it's online in store, $20. And I just think for that game, that is a phenomenal price. And of course, the second to the last item I have is the ODST. So I was really excited when I hear about this, and I think DBQ, you actually created a post on CAG about this. ODST was going to be downloadable tomorrow, but no, it's not really going to be downloadable tomorrow, right? That was just a placeholder date. So, what did you think, DB, about that when you heard it, when you heard they kind of pulled back on that date?
To me, I was surprised that when it looked like it was going to come out this week, I figured it was going to be an easy thing to kind of tie in to say, at the E3 press conference, and ODST is available now, right? That it's an easy downline, as they're hyping up Halo 4, here's something to whet people's appetite, or Halo 5, here's something to whet people's appetite beforehand. So I'm surprised that it would release before E3. But yeah, when they pulled back, who knows? So, any other thoughts, guys?
I totally agree with that. That should have been. Oh, by the way, we're done with ODST. Go download it. Oh, and it's free for everybody, not just people who, that just would have made more sense. So I think probably somebody made a typo. Somebody shouldn't have put it on online and talked about it. But it'll be interesting. I'm really, 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 really hoping that they announced that they're going to do Reach as well. Is that crazy? Yeah, it would be great to have all six games, and to be able to play them in order, and play all the co-op, and play all the online and offline. And so, I don't know. They got the team in place. Why not do Reach? You just did ODST. Do Reach too. So I'm hoping for that, and I'm hoping for that Rainbow Six Collection remastered for the Xbox One. But that's probably not going to happen as well. So my last item, and I want to talk to, and I want to talk to. Prime about this is I've heard a lot of issues are cropping up with The Witcher 3 on consoles. So Prime, you're playing Witcher 3 on the Xbox One, I believe, right?
Yes.
Are you having a lot of slowdown, a lot of sluggishness? I mean, tell us about the experience. Are you running into slowdown, frame rate issues, loading issues?
No, yeah, I saw this, I think actually just today, this afternoon, that there's been a bunch of issues, and actually, I guess some more have cropped up since they patched it. I guess there's been some save issues now. People's saves have been wiped out, and just other weird stuff like that. But as far as I've seen, I haven't had any issues. Now, I don't know if I know they patched the PC. I don't know if they patched the Xbox One, if that one came out yet for the Xbox One. But I haven't seen any slowdown. I've been in some pretty big towns with a lot of people and a lot of movement, people walking around and stuff like that. But I haven't seen any frame rate issues or slowdown or anything like that. I actually have seen on another Facebook group that I'm on, some people post their like glitches that happen and stuff, and almost kind of like like some of the Assassin's Creeds where, you know, a people's arms or head would be like stretched out or, you know, just in a weird position. But I haven't seen anything like that, so I don't know if maybe, you know, knock on wood, cross my fingers that, you know, I haven't seen anything like that. But I guess people, you know, are having problems. So, and hopefully, I don't start having problems now that this patch is out or is going to be out soon, I believe. I think it's, I'm not sure if it dropped yet, so I don't know. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I think it's the patch is due out any time now, but that's good because initially I didn't hear any problems about the Xbox and any problems with Witcher 3, and then recently you've been hearing a lot of issues. So, well, I'm glad you're not having the issues and you're still liking it, you're still playing it, and I think sometimes, you know, the minority is what gets reported, the strange or the issue or problematic is what gets reported, and the 80 to 90% who are not having a problem is what. Is what you never hear about, so that's good. That's good to know. It just seems like a great game. It's reviewed extremely well, and hopefully they can get it all fixed up. Well, guys, that's it that I had for news. That was my Fabulous Five. Anything else? I'm looking at the time. It looks like we're creeping up right up on our time limit. Anything else you want to add, DB? Anything you want to add before we close the show out?
No, I think, you know, it's going to be a slow news time for the next couple of weeks as we head into E3, but it always gets exciting around this time of year.
Well, how about you, Prime? Anything else going on? Anything else you want to talk about?
I just want to actually mention something I forgot earlier on The Witcher 3. There's actually a card game, kind of like Hearthstone, you know, a play card game that they have inside The Witcher 3 that you can play. And I've actually seen a lot of different websites saying that it's actually, you know, it's really decent. I played it once so far, and I just got destroyed on it just because I kind of didn't know what I was doing, but I'm trying to learn now. I've gone to different websites and, you know, trying to read up on it, try to figure out how to play it. But I've heard of a lot of people saying that it's actually, you know, it's really good, and even some people, which is kind of surprising, are saying that it's better than Hearthstone, which kind of shocked me because everybody loves Hearthstone. So that was, I just kind of wanted to throw that out there. It was kind of interesting that, you know, even within this big open world, there's this other little mini game that you can kind of get lost in, and I think there's like 150 cards you can collect, and you know you can go to different towns and buy, you know, different packs and stuff, and with in-game money, you know, you don't have to use real world money, so it's just kind of interesting. Other than that, no, that's pretty much all I had for this week.
Well, and that's a good point. I'd love to have another episode where we just talk about the mini games that people include in, you know, the bigger games. Like we all know about, you know, the game that was in Black Ops, you know, the text-based game, and we know about Geometry Wars that was in, what was it? Was it? Oh, now I can't remember. Project Gotham Racing? No, it was. What
yeah,
was it,
that's
DB?
right. Project Gotham. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
So
was right.
and
Project
just
Gotham
and
Racing.
There's so many of those that would be actually a great story, but I've actually heard clamorings for this card game that's inside of Witcher 3 to be released as an app for like tablets and phones, so it has to be good if people want that. So as far as next week, we're still kind of far away from E3, so next week our topic of the week is going to be good movies, not great movies, but it could be a great movie, but good movies that also had good video games. And so each of us have come up with some thoughts and ideas on that. So that'll be our really topic of the week next week. And then the following week will be our pre-E3 show. And we're going to talk about all our thoughts and expectations and all the rumors we've heard about prior to E3 you know, mid-June. So with that said, you know, this brings us to the end of another episode of the Band of Gamers podcast. I'm Greylock3491. On behalf of Osiris Prime and DBQ Hams, I would like to thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions on anything we discussed this week, please send us your email at podcast@bandofgamers.net. And until next time, thank you for listening, and peace.